split the talk into peppers and tomatoes, and I'm not going to discuss a lot about the mechanisms of involved. Our information is published. Some of it's not yet published, but so I just want to get straight into basically what we tell growers and what I show growers. I think we're familiar with this. On the East Coast, tomato spotted wilt virus is a devastating problem. Fortunately, in central and southern Florida and fruiting vegetables, it has not become a serious problem. It's a very localized issue there. Although this flecking damage on peppers has become very serious in central and southern Florida recently. A very simple set of guidelines to tell growers. Some of the work of Sabalis and Van Ren looking at the intrinsic ability of aureus to suppress thrips, and then multitude of studies where we look in actual field situations at the number of the predator versus the number of the thrips. We have suppression of thrips at one predator for about 180 thrips in pepper, and we know that we're getting very excellent control when we have one predator for about 50 thrips. Let me just mention that the value we place on aureus is much more important than any insecticide in this system. So our system is designed to conserve aureus. This goes back to some of the early work that basically occurred because the industry demanded it back in the mid-90s. We were beginning to get pepper production in North Florida. And these relationships hold around the world. Just recently returned from Ecuador. It's the same exact situation there. And Stuart alluded to this earlier. Notice I've changed my scales here. This work is published. You can readily see it. Notice that where you spray a pyrethroid, this is the number of larval thrips, the adult thrips, this is the number of the predator. And where we have untreated, we have a delayed response in our spring vegetable system in North Florida. So you will get a very high number of thrips for the first week or two of flowering. But eventually the numbers of the predator get to a favorable ratio and the thrips are brought under control. And there's so many things you can see from this that, again, hold worldwide in these relationships. Is one, look at the activity of spinosad, get improved predator-prey ratios, get control much more quickly. The other thing is the ability of aureus. The young nymphal stages need the pollen, and so there's this co-evolutionary relationship in pepper between the thrips and the aureus, and so the predator sticks around. You can see our fall production system here on the right. This is very similar to the situation I experienced in Ecuador, which is on the equator last week. And so in a system like that where you have predators operating in the system always, you tend, from a metapopulation point of view, you have fewer thrips that invade in the first place. And you never get a real buildup of the thrips. You get fewer aureus there. There's fewer prey to feed on, but they're sitting there just hanging out, waiting to feed on the predator. And so this is our situation in southern Florida most of the year, unlike northern Florida. I wanted to show this slide. It's kind of a different perspective of looking at the aureus. It's really some work that Tony Weiss did with Glades Crop Care, which is the major consulting operation in the eastern U.S. at least. And they view this situation as basically looking at what's your ratio of predator versus the number of prey in the system. And so they literally calculate the threshold based on, okay, do your thrips go above the threshold or not, based on the predator-prey ratio. And I like to show this. It's kind of interesting. I never thought of it from this perspective, and I show this around the world now. It's a simple way to relate it to growers, but essentially, again, notice the pounce here. Notice the damaging populations here, whereas if we stay here using either the untreated or Intrepid, again, which is not a thrips material, but it is for Lepidopterous pests, but it doesn't kill aureus. So we're looking at it now in our system strictly from a point of view of how do we conserve aureus. Just thought I would mention that work that I've done with Stuart and our students over the years is that aureus is a very effective predator on basically all of the flower thrips. It does prefer larvae, so as a population it'll eat the larvae first. And something that a lot of you are not familiar with is from the western U.S. or other parts of the world where you're dealing primarily with western flower thrips getting into your crop, we have native species of thrips which are not at all damaging. And but the nice thing about this is that the aureus prefers the western flower thrips as a population compared to these native thrips, which are much more active and able to evade predation more effectively. I'm going to speak now about conserving aureus. We're moving into a system where our recommendations, we look at products in the field. And we look at how they conserve aureus. I'm not going to speak a lot about the metallized mulch, but you can see that the metallized mulch does affect the aureus as well as the thrips. Overall, it's a very effective integrative tactic for us. But again, you'll notice that Avant, also not a thrips material, but can be used for other pests, less important than thrips, like Lepidopterous pests in this case. And you can see again we're looking at, is it conserving our aureus populations? We've spoken a lot here about what materials are active against western flower thrips. I'm speaking from our current recommendation point of view that we're going to our growers with. I think Luis Gomez will speak shortly. We've done some cooperative studies looking at basically anything in the world and how effective it is in this system, including unregistered products. But most of these products are currently labeled or soon to be labeled, safe to say. And I would suggest that we, as you can see, that we're looking at products that now we know are safe against pirate bugs. So we can recommend these products to our growers and say these are preferred products. One of the other things I want to point out that's critically important we're finding for managing western flower thrips is interspecific competition. Our situation in the eastern U.S. is completely different than the situation in the western U.S. In the western U.S. and in Chile, the western flower thrips outcompetes other species of thrips, and so on the native vegetation it occurs in very high numbers. In the eastern United States it is outcompeted by both Franklin yellow tritici and Franklin yellow bispinosa. This occurs at the row level, and we can't find hardly western flower thrips in our native vegetation except in periods of time in which they're inactive. Then we will find western flower thrips there. The point is, for our growers, we must identify species. It's critical. It's the answer for us. We've also moved into, and these are very carefully vetted. I have the documentation for this. I'm being very careful not. I'm sure there are other products there that we can test. But these are products that will induce western flower thrips, and most of our problem really is an induction problem in peppers in Florida. It's from utilizing chemicals that are creating an above economic threshold situation for us. And some of this is already in the literature, and some of it I think Luis will probably speak to next, or in his paper later today. But again, we're basically at the point where we're just, we're making recommendations. We're telling our growers, do not use these products, period. Again, the situation with the metallized mulch, this is from the Rights et al. Article. And you can see our native species here that are really beneficials as far as we're concerned, but the metallized mulch will reduce their numbers. You'll notice that there's kind of an unusual looking something that happens in peppers where we get initially lower numbers and then higher numbers, and that's because we're into the second generation. And the reason for that is that the metallized mulch also reduces the number of minute pirate bugs in the system, but overall it's still beneficial in terms of reducing the number of thrips, as well as in northern Florida where we have the epidemics of tomato spotted wilt virus, and reducing incidence of tomato spotted wilt virus. Okay, very specifically, these are the recommendations we're going with our growers. And we're setting up a system for identification of thrips. Our economic thresholds, let me say that in southern Florida, where we have both Thrips palmi and western Florida thrips, we find that the thresholds of those two species are very similar, so we can combine the threshold. We have a very high tolerance for the number of thrips, adult thrips in the flower, and our tolerance for the larvae is about 3 on the small fruits. We want to keep that level down below 3 in pepper. We make recommendations to conserve minute pirate bugs, and we're working very hard and diligently to provide our growers with tools for doing that, options for doing that. Never use insecticides that induce thrips, because they will. One application is basically all it takes. Ultraviolet reflective mulches, these are more critical in areas with tomato spotted wilt virus problem. We're looking at the refugia. I definitely wanted to mention it. We have problems with this in Florida, again, because the native species outcompete the western flower thrips. But again, some of the work that I've helped do out west, I know that it's really important to have a refugia area. I know this is not clearly worked out yet, but where these populations are not being exposed to insecticides and developing resistance. And again, we're moving rapidly in this way and telling our growers how to vertically integrate. In southern Florida, in pepper, we're having to vertically integrate management of pepper weevil with western flower thrips. We can do things for pepper weevil that will induce western flower thrips. A few brief comments about tomato. This system is much simpler. Again, we've seen instances of the damage already. I do want to mention tomato spotted wilt virus in this case. And our epidemiological studies in northern Florida show that most of our spread from tomato spotted wilt virus is due to primary infection. Insecticides give us no help here, as Stuart said. Insecticides late season, where we're getting the secondary infection, control of the larvae, can give us benefit. So our recommendations, either where we have tomato spotted wilt virus and areas where we don't have tomato spotted wilt virus, where we have tomato spotted wilt virus, we have to go heavy emphasis on those tactics that prevent those adult thrips from entering the field in the first place. And so we have to go to our ultraviolet reflective mulches, give us the most benefit for both control of thrips and for the virus. Again, we must distinguish between adult and larval thrips. And we also are identifying thrips, but the as you can see, our thresholds are different between adult and larval thrips, for one thing. And you'll see that our thresholds are very different for tomato than they are for pepper. Again, this is a fairly practical thing, because the numbers of thrips, tomatoes are very poor reproductive host in comparison to pepper for western flower thrips. But we do have a lower tolerance for the adult thrips because this dimpling is more important in tomatoes than it is in peppers due to the overposition. Again, in this case, we want to avoid using insecticides that induce western flower thrips. It's not as critical, and especially in our vertical integration program for tomatoes, we're very concerned about white flies and the white fly vectored viruses in that system. And the fact that it's a very poor reproductive host, we think we need to be less concerned about resistance development in this case, and the fact that we don't have aureus out there. So again, you see we're shifting our recommendations into those that are important. But again, we're vertically integrating our recommendations and trying to, for example, avoid using pyrethroids for white fly control and go to some of the other products that will give us, you know, if not thrips control, at least not induce western flower thrips. And just to end it, I'll just say that I've worked a lot with Dow over the last several years, in which we realized we had some resistance issues. And let me just say that this is confusing to people, but this is essentially your LC90 and LC99 values, and this is at a concentration where we would be expecting to get 99% control. This is the concentration where we expect to get 90% control, and essentially on those farms where the growers are doing IPM, no resistance issues. Those growers that utilize a control philosophy, resistance issues. And I'll end it with that.
Any questions for Joe before we break? Yes.
Yeah, Joe, I had, you mentioned the insecticides that you're not, or you're advising growers not to put out, and they're all pyrethroids except for dinotefuran. I'm curious, one, was that dinotefuran put through the drip?
That was a spray application. Good question. Absolutely.
How do you feel about other neonicotinoids?
Well, I almost at one point put imidacloprid there. Because if you'll notice in the studies, for example, we published in Plant Health Progress this year, we had some combination treatments with imidacloprid. But I didn't. The effect was small, and again, I don't want to be sued, or I don't want to be accused of not doing this scientifically well. And I think basically the effects are small, but I think we need to have quite a bit of concern about how we use the neonicotinoids because they can create problems. But they're also very good overall in our IPM systems for a lot of things. For example, white flies and tomato. And I'm trying to be very careful and not confuse anybody. But again, it's like any situation, the lettuce situation in Arizona. I mean, that's not a reproductive host. Well, it is but it's a poor reproductive host. Their management system is different. It needs to be different, you know. So we have to be careful not only about going from one geographic region to the other, but we have to be careful about the cropping system, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, we're moving more toward the cookbook approach for our growers. You know, keep it simple. You know, give them a system that works and show them how it works and help them, you know. So that I'm being very careful about this, but, you know, there's going to be more to follow as we understand it better.
Okay. Thank you very much, Joe. And also thank you to the speakers here this morning.